The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Morning. This is Nick Gardner. I'm flying solo today. I was expecting a guest, and he hasn't shown up. I'm confident he probably will. Maybe Kevin could give him a call and tell him to bebop on down to KCNR Studios. I'm coming to you live from KCNR 1460.com, your talk radio, on 96.5 FM. 1460 AM, we got it popping, man, popping this morning. You know, I've got some heavy thoughts, but one thing I came up with this morning, I was listening to YouTube shorts, and I'm addicted to those. I put those on, and before I know it, a half hour, 45 minutes gone by, and I'll say, well, I'm just going to listen to one more, and then I look up, and another hour's gone by, and I guess that's my addiction. But the one that I really liked was this black gal got up there and she says, why don't we ask Mrs. Willie Brown if Kamala Harris cares about black families? I thought that was pretty trick. And I think it'd be great at the debates if Donald Trump had Mrs. Willie Brown sitting right up there in front. I don't know if they're still married or not, if she's still alive or not, but he could have maybe six or eight people dress up just like her. And maybe put Kamala on edge with that. So let's get on to the first topic. Although I can take credit for the storm last night or yesterday, I remember saying during the winter numerous times, I wish we could save one of these cold, rainy days for the middle of August. And the big guy up in the sky must have been listening to me because we got one yesterday. And it is nice. The air is just so clean and crisp outside. If you haven't noticed, it's been cool in the mornings, and I'm hoping for an early fall. I believe it's going to come on. So let's talk about the acid canal. You know, I went to the showing of the show last night at the Cascade Theater. Talk about a liberal love fest. There was no shortage of liberals in the room. But it was a very good production. It was put together real well. I enjoyed it quite a bit. There was a few things on it that I would question. One thing is that there's 130 water districts in California that was affected by not getting the amount of water they usually get. They were promised, 75% would be the least it would be cut at any time. And they cut it down to, what was it? I think it was 17.4%. No, that's how many million dollars. Oh, 18%. They were going to get 18% of their water. And Brenda Haynes, I talked to her, and I was very impressed with what she had to say about the water. But she had studies done, and the studies said that the water wouldn't get past Crown Motors. And that was questioned. But the thing is, the acid canal doesn't have a customer all the way to Bonneview, which is at least 2 miles. So the water probably wouldn't have got that far. And what also was questioned was the fact that they didn't put up much of a fight. And fact is, the 130 water districts that were all affected, that all got the same cutback, put up $3 million and tried to litigate against the Bureau of Water Reclamation, and they didn't get anywhere. So they did put up a fight. And Brenda and the board, you know, Brenda gets all of the criticism and blame, but actually there's five people on the board. They figured out the best thing to do was sell the water, and they got $7.4 million for it. They wouldn't have got any water. And at the end of the day, the water customers didn't know till the last minute they weren't getting water, so you can't blame them for being sore. And they go to a meeting and voice their frustrations at this board that, in my opinion, did the best they could with what they had to work with. And I can understand the frustrations because they've got nobody else to vent against. And along comes Jim Rickard to run against Brenda. He couldn't have picked a more perfect time to run against somebody. And it was just a set of circumstances. The cut in the water, I wonder if they would have got a larger percent of their water if it would have affected Churn Creek Bottom, because the acid canal doesn't service Churn Creek Bottom. Churn Creek Bottom has pumps that pump their water out of the river. And the river's got to be at 3,500 feet, cubic feet per second, for their pumps to work. And it was below that almost all the time. So what happened is, they didn't get any water, and the Bureau came down and said, well, their problem was they didn't keep up with their infrastructure. So this film seemed to say that they didn't keep up with their infrastructure across the whole spectrum of the canal, when the fact is they had kept up with their infrastructure. You didn't see any leaks up until this last year. There was no problems. You know, people criticized that Snowbegotten was a real problem by putting limbs and stuff like that into the ditch, when in fact it wasn't, because they cleaned it out immediately. We've got things going on here. So anyway, Chris Street has showed up. We'll get to that. Snowbegotten, a lot of these people think this is once in 100 years, when in fact we have it every 20 years. I remember in 1968 it snowed so heavy in Redding that it caved in the roof of the Timber Lanes up at the corner of Lake Boulevard and Highway 273. And there was a skating rink south of town where the roof caved in. It put those businesses out of business. So it's not unusual, and we never had any problems with our acid canal. So all of a sudden the water's cut off. The levees of the canal dry out. Evidently, they deteriorated in a lot of spots. When they get the water, everybody thinks the problem's solved, and they pat Jim Rickard on the back for that. And all of a sudden, we've got infrastructure problems. Well, the thing is, we didn't have infrastructure problems before James Rickard showed up. I'm not saying it's his fault, but you could just as easily blame him for that as you can blame Brenda and the board for not getting enough water. So I think that was misplaced about it. Chris Street is here. I'm so happy you showed up. Good morning.
Great. I'm sorry if I'm being a little late, but these things happen.
That's right. So we've got a clip. Chris, I want you to introduce yourself. You've got a podcast that is really interesting. Mountaintoptimes.substack. You should go to that and listen to Chris talk. But this clip is a little bit more national, and I want you to listen to it and share your opinion of it. So could we go to clip number one? 1 second. Okay, so we're going to get there. And
all right, you ready?
We're ready. We've been ready.
To my journey, most from...
No, that's not it. Clip number one.
You sent me one clip, and in the email it says, I have one clip.
Okay, go to the clip that isn't the opening music clip, besides Matthew McConaughey.
It says, out of break.
Okay, so we're not going to go to that clip. What do you want to talk about, Chris?
Well, I think we, you know, if you want to talk about the mountaintop times, I mean, this has been, you know, something that we started with an effort to, you know, get better information for people that, you know, that the local news and such wasn't very effective. And so we started a publication, the Mountaintop Times, and, you know, we've been putting articles up, and we're getting to the point of 10,000 views a week, and so we're getting quite a lot of traction. Now, Substack is sort of the new vehicle for newspapers. They are completely open to whatever you want to say, and there's no sort of throttling of you know, information. And because of that, you get people who are really willing to, you know, work hard and create a following, and that's what we've been doing. We started this, I believe, we're on our 10th week, and we're at thousands of viewers every day. We have podcasts. We also have, of course, written material. But most of the issues I focus on are actually about money and people's lives. And so that process, I'm an expert in the state of California finances. I was a treasurer of Orange County. And because of that, I had an experience. I'm the fellow that exposed Bob Citron down in Orange County when he had his investment scheme that bankrupted the county. So I exposed his financial manipulation. And after things blew up, I was on the restructure. So when things got bad in California in 2009 and 2010, I sat on a 5-member advisory committee for the state treasurer, and we pretty much saw every number from the state of California. And what you learned at that time is that there was a $90 billion budget. It went to $70 billion in revenue, and the state essentially was in the position of defaulting. The state of California has a unique structure. They have 924 amendments to the state constitution. Those amendments, you would think, are about ideology. They're absolutely not. They lock in corporate money and spending. So whenever there's a rise in revenue, those corporations get all the money. Whenever there's a fall in revenue, those corporations have a grab on the cash, and so you end up having literally a financial default. And that's where we are now, except the numbers are so much bigger this year. Revenues have gone from $280 billion to $180 billion, probably going south. So there's no manager in the world that could handle that kind of a drop in revenues in a business, let alone the idea that your revenues are absolutely earmarked by these 924 constitutional amendments. So I've been sort of through a lot of financial issues, and so I try to bring that perspective to the Mountaintop Times.
So let me ask you this. I remember a year or two ago we had a $100 billion surplus, and all of a sudden we're broken in the hole. How does that happen?
You know the thing on a, and it's gone. That money, no matter how big it is absolutely going to get spent. And that money, when it goes from no matter how big it is to no matter how small it is, you still have all the obligations of wherever it was at the last peak.
That's right.
And this is the challenge that everyone's facing. And you can blame it on ideology. You say the leftists did this, or that they were too, you know, they weren't willing to do that. The bottom line to it is the system in California doesn't make any sense. And things that don't make any sense in business eventually go out of business. Now, the state can't go out of business, but this is pretty close.
Well, you mentioned that the obligations, the financial obligations, are still there when they took them at the peak. And to play that into the city of Reading and the county, they take these temporary grants, ARPA funds in particular, they put on new personnel, maybe police, firefighters. All of a sudden, the ARPA funds are gone, and we don't have the money to keep them going.
Well, it's even worse than that, Nick, because what happens is you get these commitments. You know, the cities and the counties, they're actually what do the work in California.
Yes.
That's where the money goes. The state of California has a great gig. They get money from state taxes, but they also get federal dollars. And they're allowed to take 12.5% administrative fee off the top of it. So you have $600 billion of revenue, both about 280, maybe 300 billion from state taxes, but over 300 billion from the feds. They get 12.5% of that. So they get, you know, $72 billion off the top for basically being a bank.
Where's it go?
Well, that's a great question. You should talk to all these executives. You know, there's a publication out that tells you, Transparent California.
Oh, yeah. I go to that religiously.
Amazing how many people have, you know, almost $1 million pensions now. And people who are also up in the $500,000-$700,000, you know, a year range, but they also get things on top of it. All their benefit ends up being pensionable. Can you imagine that you get a car allowance, you know, in the business, and somehow that is in your pension?
Well, you know, I've always criticized Mike Warren and Leonard Modi because they get roughly between $18,000 and $20,000 a month, CalPERS. Well, that's just chump change to these guys up there. $1 million?
Well, $18,000 to $20,000 a month in Shasta County is not chump change.
Well, it is when you start comparing the pensions for other places.
Yeah, for other places, it's terrible. But I really want to emphasize that things that don't make sense go away. And that's really what's happening right now. You know, everybody doesn't understand that every 45 years, the way America is designed, the founders, you know, they were facing empires, and they had to move quick and break things, kind of like Silicon Valley.
Sure.
So they had to come up with a system of government that made government very inefficient, kind of like running in molasses, and allowed people to be very disruptive. And because of that, you have these incredible economic booms that last about 45 years. And at the end of the boom, everybody goes crazy. And it's kind of like the same thing's happening right now. All of this boom is now over. The idea of the semiconductor is going to be a disruptive technology of the future. You know, that's a 1960s technology. But what caused the boom, this last boom, was of all things a tax rebellion in 1978 in California called Prop 13. And that led to, you know, Reagan going to the White House. That led to cutting capital gain taxes from 70%. You know, down to about 20%. And now you're sort of running off the end of that boom, and there's nothing new to replace it. But all the costs, all this success have gone up incredibly. So you have the worst of all worlds, cost and no revenue.
Well, let me ask you this. The way I understand Proposition 13 is it made it to where the county sent all their property tax to Sacramento, and Sacramento sent it back but told the counties how they had to spend 85% of it, and the rest of it was discretionary money, meaning the county could spend it any way they want. That sounds like a complete failure. How can we turn that around?
Well, I think it's going to turn itself around. I was on this committee in 2009 and 2010, and we saw all of it. It didn't matter the environmentalists, anybody else. Once they learned it was their job, all of a sudden they were happy to be cooperative. And, you know, we weren't sure we could turn it around on a $20 billion drop. Imagine what it's like on a $100 billion drop. But the process, California needs to hit the wall. And it's hitting the wall as hard as it can. This terrible financial mess that's government. Now, let's just take a look at in 1978 till today, personal incomes in California have gone up 13 times. State revenues in California have gone up 18 times. So government actually got more out of the success of, you know, the Reagan Revolution and the technology boom and all that than the people. Now it's going to go back the other direction. You're going to have essentially a collapse in government, and that government's going to collapse and become much, much smaller. The state can't file bankruptcy. But the cities and the counties, that's where the pressure is going to be. They're the ones that are going to take the brunt of this.
Is Shasta County leading the way when it comes to government getting smaller? It sure looks to me like it is.
Well, I think there's this is my philosophy, okay? Shasta County was very inefficient about getting grant money. You know, they didn't have the right system in place, and to a great degree, they were, you know, rural and, you know, and off the chart, but they did get a lot of grants, they spent a lot of money, and they built an infrastructure that started to get in trouble, that caused, you know, problems. You saw new elections, people change. Now you've got a pretty conservative board, and you're working back down in the other direction. And I think Shasta County is the, you know, it's the state leader, if not the national leader. You know, this is a county that converted itself in 2014 to suburban.
Yes, I wonder what the thinking was behind that.
Well, suburban means that you're comparable salaries for executives, not for workers, only for executives, went up 51%. Now, think about that. You know, this is definitely a rural community. You know, when the federal government looks to spend money, it's got what is called Periscope. It's got a square mile of every piece of property in America. And they rate those pieces of property as to the demographics and the financial situation, whether it's urban, suburban, or rural. So Shasta County might have one little square you could call suburban. You know, the rest of it is all going to be rural. So Shasta County, though, you know, decided that it was going to be suburban, so it is going to have suburban costs, and it's going to have rural revenue. That's a bad combination.
Yeah, let me point out one thing. Now that we have become a charter county, that's something that would have been voted on, whether to be a suburban county or a charter county.
It's even worse than that. They simply, you know, they are members of what's called CSAC, the California State Association of Counties. And so there are three caucuses in CSAC. The largest number in the caucuses is rural with 27 counties, and the suburban counties were 17. So Shasta became a suburban county, and, you know, this new board went back to being a rural county. But think about this. Shasta County now is the most important rural county in California, so it has the biggest delegation of counties in California. If you take a look on this nationally, if they really work this right, California's rural caucus would be the largest rural caucus in the United States. So when Shasta County was suburban, there were no meetings of the suburban caucuses in Shasta County. Now that they're quote-unquote rural, you know, 80-some percent of the state of California is rural. This is where they're going to come. They're going to form organizations and work for rural ideas. If they take this and work it, and then you go nationally with it, you know, Shasta County could be punching at the top level, you know, in Washington, D.C., for issues associated with rural communities.
In common sense, that means that we are no longer a big fish in a small pond. We're a big fish in a big pond.
That's actually the biggest pond. Rural turns out to be the biggest pond, not by population. But when you think about what California is all about, I mean, all of this land in California, you have these little islands, you know, called cities.
Sure.
But you can, you know, you fly over country in California, see a lot of empty property, see a lot of woods, you see a lot of, you know, vast farmland.
Yes, absolutely. Follow, because we didn't have the water here a couple years ago.
Well, and remember, I'll give you my perspective on the water. Now, in 1973, they had 73, 74, Jerry Brown was governor. They're having the same kind of financial crisis we're having now. So in 1975, he cut California's spending on infrastructure from the highest in the country, 18% annually of the budget. He cut that to 3%. And then he eventually cut it to 0.75% because, Nick, dams don't vote. So by cutting this infrastructure, he killed, you know, farmers. He killed manufacturing. But he got all that, you know, he saved that cash, and they were able to spend it mostly on the coast.
Yes.
You know, and so what you have in California is you have infrastructure literally for 1975 and population for 2024. There are six dams approved in California. Those six dams, had they been built, You know, manufacturing and agriculture need water. You know, oil drilling needs water, fracking.
Sure.
So that you can say I'm against fracking because I philosophically, but the real reason you're against it is we don't have the water to inject and push the oil up. The real reason I'm not against manufacturing. It used to be along the 99 freeway. They're not against that, but they'd have to spend the money for the power plants. California has to import 33% of its power. That's why you have the highest electric rates in the continental United States, 35 cents a kilowatt versus 12 cents in Texas. That's where the business goes. You could build your own power plants in California, and you could have those prices plus California's brains and creativity, and this place would be back in boom. But old California now is stuck with the worst balance sheet in the country. For the last 5 years, they haven't had an audited financial statement. Can you imagine if the radio studio we're in right now didn't file audited financials? Nobody would bank them.
That's right. We're going to have to go to a break, so hang on. We've got some good stuff coming out of break, so be sure to be here.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history. It is with great honor and pride that we have been able to support several amazing local businesses like these over the years.
Thanks to the Redding Rancheria for their support of the Kiwanis Shasta Dam Club Food for Kids program. We send 185 bags of food home every Friday. They're instrumental in helping us.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Unleash the heat and let the hunt turn every moment into a sizzling spectacle. Experience the allure of the hottest male performers heating up the event center at Wind River Resort and Casino on Friday and Saturday, August 23rd and 24th. Get up close and personal with these male dancers as they work their way from the stage and through the crowd. Tickets for this steamy event are just $20 plus fees and include $10 free slot play. For tickets or complete details, visit windriver.com or call 1-800-280-UWIN. Find performance at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Redding and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria!
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Redding Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
People say I'm no good, crazy as a loon. I get stoned in the morning, I get drunk in the afternoon. Kinda like my old blue tick hound, I like to lay around in the shade. And I ain't got no money, but I damn sure got it made. But I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. Don't like the way I'm living, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone.
And that's what happened to our country. Our younger generation, which is me, we weren't paying attention. And we had it too good. And a lot of us were getting loaded in the morning and drunk in the afternoon. And life was good. Well, it's not so good anymore because we weren't paying attention. I'm Nick Gardner. I'm here with my guest, Chris Street. We're on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM 1460 AM. And I wanted to give a shout out to John Knight. He is the guy responsible for Mountaintop Media, Mountaintop Times. He's got a business down south of town, Northern Roots, for all your fertilizer growing needs. So thank you, John. You're a real patriot. I've got a clip coming up. We're going to play it right now, and I know that Chris is going to have a lot of insight on this. So shoot.
We're in a new period of collapse of the U.S. dollar, and it's quite frightening, and it does mean that the dollar will be removed as the world currency. I mean, what will take its place, I think, is still up for grabs. But the U.S. dollar has made itself as unattractive as it possibly can be to world transactions. People are moving into all sorts of alternatives to the U.S. dollar, and they will, and we will all move to a separate alternative regime in the global economy. Maybe Bitcoin, maybe gold, maybe some other set of currencies. But that is the direction we're headed. It was the Great Depression that caused World War II. It was literally the tariffs and quotas and restrictions on trade that caused World War II. It is the weakening of the U.S. We have not done the defense spending correctly. We've not done the economic growth correctly. We've not done sound dollar correctly. All of these have made the U.S. look vulnerable and made it so that people are willing to try us out for size. Frankly, I don't trust the dollar. I don't trust Powell and the Fed. I don't trust the U.S. Congress and government right today to create a good scenario for positive economic growth in the U.S. We are moving away from monetary stability. We're moving towards an unhinged paper currency again. Taxes were moving in the wrong direction. Government spending were moving in the wrong direction. All of these are signs of senescence, of weakness, of fleeing the government policies. And to me, that's not good. The only way of getting around this, of changing this, is with a radical revolutionary economic set of policies. When Trump was president, when Ronald Reagan was president, when Kennedy was president, they didn't mess with us. And the reason they didn't mess with us is we had a strong military and free trade and good economics. They wanted to do business with us and not wanting to fight us. Now they don't want to do business with us because of all of our restrictions and sanctions and all that. And now with the weak military we have, they want to fight us. That is not a winning strategy. Believe me when I tell you, Michelle. And if it goes on, this is what could lead to a serious conflict on a world scale.
Comments?
Well, I think that I have a lot of comments on that. First of all, this is the 80th year anniversary of the Bretton Woods Conference at the end of World War II that created the dollar as the reserve currency. And let's just talk about the real situation at the real time. You know, the United States had absolutely accumulated 70% of the world's entire gold supply because for the first 2 years of the war, we sold all the belligerents, you know, the things they needed to wage war. Now, we sold it what was called cash and carry. And cash and carry meant you pay gold for it, pay cash, it has to be backed in gold, and then you take it on your transportation, you take it to Europe. And then that went on until 1941. And in 1941, America was still such a consumer, we made 3 million cars. That we were attacked in December. By January, we'd taken the entire economy of the United States through the War Powers Act, converted it into a war economy, and we made 169 cars, consumer cars, between 1942, 3, 4, and 5. So this economy of the United States then became the engine of the world. And we were still doing business with belligerents. They just had to be on our side. So we were still charging the UK. We were still charging Russia the cost of buying our planes. We sold, I believe, 14,000 planes to Russia. We sold, I believe, 16,000 tanks. So America is really good at doing business in war. And we came out at the end of the war. The good news is we had all the gold. You know, we had it all ourselves. But a third of the world was going communism. Do we really want that? I mean, we could have fought World War II, won the war, and lost the peace. So they came up with a thing called Bretton Woods that said we would honor your currency as long as, and we would back our currency with gold. Now, why did we do that? Because if we didn't do that, we would have had one of the worst depressions in the history of the planet. That's what happens after every big war.
That's kind of what we're approaching now, isn't
well,
it?
And I think we're sort of on the once again, there are these 45-year cycles that when they begin, it's from terrible tragedy and financial ruin, which is what we're involved in right now. And California always leads by about 2 years, and then the country's following. You're just seeing the United – California's been doing this since a year ago in March. That's when their revenues started to really dive. The United States is doing the same thing right now, but they're about a year, year and a half out. California will have this terrible existential financial crash, and will take such a punch in the face that will actually change. The rest of the world doesn't change. The United States will follow that. But we're still in a crash. It doesn't matter if Trump wins or not. We're still going to be in a financial crisis through 2026, maybe even much worse. It's just locked in this kind of problem. But when he talks about, you know, we're going to lose the dollar and all that, we've already gone off the gold standard. And the gold standard was a great idea. It worked great in the, you know, in the 40s and in the 50s. And in the 60s, the French cheated. The French took their money, and they would hand us a dollar and demand gold exchange. So they weren't just giving us the dollar and transacting in dollars. They were giving us the dollar and taking the gold from underneath it. And that caused the 1970, you know, breakup of the U.S. currency as gold back. You then run through this process through the 70s, and 70s were terrible. And now you're getting into the, you know, the next end of the process, and people are have the same kind of issues. But we won the Cold War. Why are we still fighting the Cold War by being the policemen of the world? We won that war. I mean, I don't care what you talk about Russia. They're nothing like the Soviet Union.
Yeah, but we're a war-based economy is what it amounts to.
Well, I mean, as I've said, we went from 3 million consumers cars 1 year and then didn't build essentially any for the next four and then converted right back to a consumer economy. So we're able to do this, Nick, because we're so damn flexible. But right now we're still fighting, you know, as if the Soviet Union hadn't collapsed. We have this incredible footprint around the world, and the good news about being the reserve currency of the world is that, you know, people transact in your currency.
Yes.
You know, through the 60s, that was a great deal. It gave us financial advantage. The problem when you're the reserve currency of the world, you got to bail out all the participants that fail in your currency window. So now we're in the situation where, you know, we got ourselves almost in a war in Taiwan. We've got ourselves really in a war in Ukraine and really in a war in Israel. Now, why are we doing this? Why aren't we trying to be the economic engine and, you know, let them go their own way? They want to have their own reserve currency. They want to be the BRICS. Go. See how it works out without the United States. For the United States, this has cost us a lot of jobs. You've had all this incredible immigration that's part of this I'm a world player kind of thing. I don't think Americans really winning on that. We need to go back on what wins for us, not wins for everybody else. Now, if it's good for others to participate because we are the winners, great. Let's be the example of winning. What do I think is happening right now? I think we're right in the crisis. Do I think the dollar will weaken? Absolutely. Do I think gold will strengthen? Absolutely. You're having a crisis, and about 10% of the time, gold is a fantastic investment, and it just seems to go straight up. But 90% of the time, when it's not a crisis, gold tends to fall, and it tends to have very expenses. You know, trading in gold, if I give you a piece of gold, you got to have it assayed to see it really is gold.
Sure.
So you have all these issues. I mean, the dollar works. The, you know, people don't realize that we've already had the first financial crisis. One of the largest banks in Europe, UBS failed. And there was an effort to have a bailout, and Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chairman, wouldn't let UBS's it was Credit Suisse. Credit Suisse Trust Bank in New York borrowed directly from the Fed. So we've already started to cut off the rest of the world from this daddy takes care of you kind of thing I'm talking about. So I think we need to go down that path. I think, you know, the idea of, that we're still in this war in Ukraine and such like that, I mean, that's kind of the old way of thinking. You know, is any chance we get, we go, you know, and start a war. How's that working out?
Not very well, in my opinion.
Well, and I think it's kind of actually, it's you're going to have these, you know, last, I call it the last mating calls of the dinosaur as the meteor augers in. Their world is changing. You know, I mean, you just had a coup of the President of the United States because the Democrat Party's, you know, whole proposition failed. It's failed with the American people. And so they, you know, incredibly just took him out. I mean, there wasn't a constitutional process. They basically said we can do it the easy way or the hard way. So we're in kind of like, we're a different country in different times. But that's what makes America great, is we take a punch in the face when it's so hard that we actually learn from it. Nobody else tends to learn from it.
Well, I hope it turns out good for us. It's a spooky old world, especially politically out there. I think Kamala Harris is going down, no pun intended. But it just amazes me they can't come up with a better candidate than that. And I compare it to about 6 months ago, I predicted Michelle Obama would be our next president. Not because she's qualified, it's because the powers are telling us we can do anything we want and you can't do anything about it. And if Kamala Harris happens to win the presidency, that's exactly what they're telling us, because she's a worse candidate than Michelle could be.
Well, Michelle Obama is a brilliant lawyer. You know, she's absolutely credible in many, many ways and has the worst temper of any lawyer that you would possibly meet. My friends who know her and have been on the same side and on the other side say she's just absolutely ballistic and it wouldn't work. Her real personality would come out. And you know, she was a Sidley in Austin in Chicago. Chicago's a tough town, and she was one of the toughest players there. But a lot of these people, when you deal with them as lawyers, you know, remember, lawyer is an officer of the court. That means they're really a government person. Isn't that what it says?
Sure.
So they sort of see the things from the government's perspective. The problem with government, it's never made another job. It's spent lots of money. It does a lot of things I think that are good. I think it should have Social Security. I think you should have public health. I mean, these things, the alternatives aren't so good. Having said that, there are a number of things they should do them very, very well, and they should stay the hell out of the things that they don't do well, which is, you know, like building dams in California. That's something that should have happened, dams and power. But that's not, there's no votes. There's, you know, dams and power doesn't vote each month. I'm hearing you talk about water. I mean, the key resource, if you built the dams, you'd have so damn much water in California that, you know, you'd never have a drought for the next 100 years.
The thing is, the reason we have government is to provide safety and infrastructure that we can't provide ourselves, and that's dams. And
right.
They didn't do it.
Well, the dams don't vote.
That's
unfortunately,
right.
Everywhere in the world, politics is the same way.
But that's why the founding fathers didn't mean for there to be career politicians. It seems most of our problems started when we started with career politicians.
Well, we got there. Yes, we did. I mean, the original founders were, remember, there were 45 people at, you know, that wrote the were part of the Declaration of Independence. And seven of those went bankrupt. Like five of them were captured during the war. I mean, they were cutting loose everything from the big government, from the British Empire, and they knew they were at massive risk. And so they didn't have the best opinion of government, but they were also a little bit concerned about people, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, we had a revolution. United States was the first country to win a revolution. We changed the world. Every colony out there knew all of a sudden, these guys can be beat. And you had this revolution in thought, this American revolution that, you know, 15 years later went completely insane in France, and they started, instead of having, you know, giving you freedom, they gave you heads.
Yes.
So, you know, America is just a different place, and we do a lot of things wrong, but we tend to get it right. And I think, Nick, we are on the verge of the greatest economic boom in the history of the world. Our grandkids and kids are going to be the wealthiest people in the world, but we're going to get there the hard way, because that's the way we always get there. We have to really change. We have to go through a big punch in the face, and then we're going to lead the world to the next boom.
Well, you know, the United States is the only country, probably one of the few countries, where if you go out and invent something, you get to enjoy the fruits of your labor. Other countries, the government takes it, and you're living in poverty.
Well, look at the tech industry that's come out of Silicon Valley. Absolutely spectacular. The wealth is incredible. You know, it's a lot like the auto industry. You know, remember the auto industry was full of beauty and, you know, parts of Illinois and the Detroit. We're just all of that Detroit, Michigan, and Illinois. All that area was, you know, the richest part of the world. I mean, literally the richest county in America was outside of Detroit. San Francisco sort of is the new Detroit.
Yes.
They had this massive boom. They went way too far. You know, they didn't understand where they came from. They changed the roots. And now you're having one of the most dangerous cities in America, in the world, is San Francisco. Crime is absolutely rampant. Every day, if you want to watch, there's a channel actually in San Francisco that, you know, that nobody outside of San Francisco watches, that's about crime. You know, they use the security cameras and they watch people robbing things. And most folks are so used to it, they just back off and let them take it.
Sure.
I mean, that's when you're at a level of chaos that you are the modern Detroit.
That's right. And, you know, it's going to get better in San Francisco, because they're deporting their ne'er-do-wells to other communities around the state. Redding's getting some of them.
Yeah, they do that, don't they?
I noticed the other day, well, about 6 weeks ago, I noticed these guys walking around, and they were bald-headed with tattoos covering their head, and tattoos all over their body. And it just dawned on me the day before yesterday, these are MS-13 people.
Right.
And they're here in Redding.
Well, I think that they're everywhere now. I mean, it's been an open border policy, but this
is flagrant now.
Well, it was flagrantly here, but not flagrantly visible.
There you
That's
go.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, they were definitely here. And, you know, there's Shasta County and Redding, you know, when they were closing the mills.
Yes.
They were the Shasta County in Redding was taking money from the Spotted Owl. That's pretty mean-spirited, watching folks, you know, watching their kids, you know, not at school going to, you know, on the free lunch program, people with great pride and worked very, very hard. And, you know, but I had to take the money. It's going to happen anyway. We'll just take the money. I mean, that is a kind of mean-spirited thing that it's hard to understand why they would do it. But they do it. I mean, are the people that take money from the Spotted Owl when they're closing the mills, are they any better than MS-13?
That's comparable to somebody running down food stamps yet getting them themselves.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I know people that could qualify for food stamps that have enough pride they wouldn't eat. They won't go get
them. And there's some that's very, very sad that really, really could use it.
Absolutely.
But they just, they tough it out. So, you know, morality is not a good thing for government to decide. I think that's a personal thing.
Absolutely.
I think that's a, based on your faith or whatever your thoughts are. You know, that government does a really bad job of trying to be the moral leader. Not only the moral leader of California, of the United States, but actually trying to be the moral leader of the world. I think if I'm in government, I should be very, very cautious about what I say and what I do, and have a lot of willingness to look at my performance rather than criticize others.
And that what we've got now is our educational system teaching morals.
Well, that's right. They're saying we are the high ground and everybody else's dirt. And you need, and as the high ground, we need to go higher. Here are some values that you need to adopt. And to most people, that's kind of like wackadoodle. I can't tell you how many liberal women I know who, you know, have children. And then when the schools closed down, the children came and they were home and they were doing homeschooling and they saw the curriculum and they were just appalled that this was actually going on. And they didn't know. A lot of those people have really started working on their own family, on their own humility, and, you know, gone back to basic values. I think that's what's coming. I talk about these 45-year cycles. You know what comes out of these 45-year cycles? Is a religious enlightenment. Each time you go from, you know, people going to church is way, way down. You know, socialism, communism is popular. People are talking about, you know, drug, sex, and rock and roll really is a, you know, it's okay. You can do that now. And then they have this change. You go through the cycle. And on the other side of the cycle is people actually become more moral internally. And they take that and they build incredible businesses. You know, you have an incredible boom. So, Nick, as bad as it is right now, I think you should sort of say, oh, this tells me it's going to be wildly better because we're now addressing the issues.
Just like making Shasta County a charter county.
That's it, right.
It made the people, they're the ones that tell their county board of supervisors what they want. It's not the county board of supervisors telling the people what they're going to do. And that's a big difference.
Well, sometimes you got to take charge, you know, and I think the people have to take charge here, and they are.
Oh, our board of supervisors, the people didn't take charge for the last 25, 30 years, if not longer. It's enlightening. It's really nice to see that we've got three conservatives up there that'll stand up and say, this is what the people want.
Yeah, I'm going to more say that it's great that the community is behind these kind of changes. Because remember, if you don't get good government if you don't show up at Board of Supervisor meetings, you know, if you don't show up at City Hall, you know, you see a lot more people getting very involved. That's what, you know, at the Mountaintop Times, we get a lot of our stories and information from folks in the community. I heard you start to talk about water and such. You know, we're happy to go look at those issues. We're happy to work on crime. You know, getting the visibility of this, having a vehicle to do that through the Mountaintop Times has been incredible. I can't make there's some issues going on actually with prosecutions right now. You'll hear more about, but I think it's because we helped law enforcement. We helped the issues become more visible to where you could get a solution. Because if they're not visible, if the people don't pay attention, you can't get change.
In my opinion, the only credible news source about local issues is KCNR radio and the Mountaintop Times, Mountaintop Media. That's it.
It's great to be part of that with you.
You can't believe the Record Searchlight, a news cafe, Shasta Scout. It's just it's incredible.
Well, they're different than we are. You know, we are.
Well, they're educated. You're educated. I'm not. I'm just a local.
I kind of went to all of that. Yeah, I went to Harvard, Stanford, UC. I kind of did that. So, but I think that I started out, you know, here in Redding, California, as a kid. I grew up in an alley between 9th and 10th West Street between 9th and 10th. That wasn't exactly well off then. But this was the greatest town in the, you know, 50s and 60s. I mean, it was fun. There was a downtown. You know, kids had a blast. We thought it was the greatest place to live. And then they lost their way.
The news from...
Coming back.
We're done. Thank you, Chris Strait, for coming in.
Your choice, Shasta Regional Medical Center.